Good evening. My name is Al Whitney. Welcome to In Defense of Humanity on this 22nd day of April, 2017. This program is about helping people reawaken to the wonderful qualities of our own species while accepting and understanding that the current corporate commercial legal structure, both government and business is built upon, is actively seeking to take control of most organic life forms on the planet. Restoring our unalienable rights and preserving our planet will require that we, the people, understand what has happened and learn how to empower ourselves as living men and women. Much of the information discussed on this show can be found on my website, anticorruptionsociety.com. If you need to remind yourself why humanity is worth defending, please read and enjoy the In Defense of Humanity page listed at the top of the Anti-Corruption Society homepage. I'd like to make new listeners aware that there is a free People's Empowerment Guide to our corporate commercial legal system on my website called Lawfully Yours. It is a collaboration of many men and women in the legal accountability movement. You can locate it by clicking on the Lawfully Yours tab at the top of my homepage. Our guide has been viewed more than 50,000 times since it was posted 2 years ago and is now in the 9th edition. We keep adding to it as more info and ideas come to our attention. This guide contains valuable strategies for challenging the non-existent authority of our corporate commercial government. Well, tonight's topic that I'd like to explore with the listeners is something called psychological band-aids. What are they and where do they come from? I've been aware of this for many years. In fact, oh my gosh, maybe 20 years ago, I was involved with a court-appointed special advocacy program for children, and it made me very curious how it came to be that so many parents were so dysfunctional, and so I started reading and reading and reading and reading, trying to find an answer to that question, why so many parents didn't seem to be able to care for their children and nurture their children in a healthy way. On that quest, I learned a lot. I read a lot. I learned a lot. I also learned that the current form, of psychology that is ongoing in our country isn't much help, helping people deal with some of the problems that they're having with themselves, their marriages, their relationships, and their children, because it has all been designed basically to blame the individual who comes into the counselor seeking help and make the problem the fault of that individual. And generally that doesn't really help. That doesn't solve the problem. So I got to thinking what might be going on that psychologists aren't acknowledging. Perhaps what we are taught are bad habits or compulsions, or addictions, etc., aren't that at all. Perhaps they're really band-aids. I'm referring to behaviors such as gambling, shopping, excessive shopping, hoarding, excessive exercising, alcoholism, smoking, overeating, and sex addiction, etc. The medical establishment even created something called an addictive personality and oftentimes infer that this condition is an inherited trait. The implication is that either we are weak or we're genetically flawed. 12-step programs have come about to help people overcome these so-called addictions, and lots of money is currently made from convincing people they need to go into rehab facilities to get better. In fact, there are now reality intervention shows on TV. Generally, while conditions like alcoholism are referred to as diseases, feeling self-hatred or shame is a common emotion for those afflicted by these conditions. But if you look closer at the social engineering that has been ongoing for more than a century, and I might add, the current group of psychologists never do, the origin of these behaviors can be readily identified. Again, we're living in a system, and we've all been products of social engineering for more than a century, as were our parents. So what is the result of all this social engineering? Who's doing it, and what was the purpose? I'd like to share with you two clips tonight, one from a talk that John Taylor Gatto gave called The Pathology of Schooling. And you can see the whole talk that he gave, and I believe it's a little over an hour, if you go to YouTube and you type in John Taylor Gatto, it's G-A-T-T-O, The Pathology of Schooling. It's brilliant, as all of his material is. And John spent his whole career in education. He got awards as an educator. He bucked the system. He taught in prep schools. He taught in schools in poor neighborhoods. And he read incessantly. He also discovered the history of our educational system. That was part of his search. So I'm going to share with you just about 12 minutes of the talk that John Taylor Gatto gave called The Pathology of Schooling. So let's listen to the John Taylor Gatto clip first, Ken.
Anyone whose mind is actively searching for the profound maps which explain events and people and yourself is on the road to meeting the standard I'm trying to establish. There are countless ways, great and small, to interdict intelligence and intellect and prevent it from developing. But the most effective break I know is to ruin the ability to concentrate. School teaches this negative capability in a variety of ways, like bells. But the least well-understood tactic schools use is to provide a social setting which crackles with menace. Like the peaceful farm mill pond of school biology class notoriety, that under whose tranquil surface everybody's murdering everybody else, even the best schools make an ongoing slaughter of innocents beneath the visible surface of the classroom. Just a few days ago, a 25-year-old woman wrote to me from Tucson this chilling line: I can hardly say, now that I'm 26, why I began to be so afraid of going to school. I've gotten that letter in the last 5 years 100 times or more. Open your next novel with that line: I can hardly say, now that I'm nearly 26, why I began to be so afraid of going to school, and half the readers in this country will find their hearts beating faster. My correspondent infers that her disability was a personal thing, but a huge number of us have suppressed the memory of our torment out of spiritual self-protection. Who wants to remember being swallowed alive and taught to feel self-contempt at your own powerlessness and contempt for your parents for their powerlessness to help you? The terror of school's inherent socialization procedures is a matter we will all be compelled to address one day, but as yet it remains terra incognita in the literature. The sabotage of the ability to read challenging texts is the strongest single attack on the development of concentration that school launches. An overwhelming mass of evidence exists from the period of American history prior to forced schooling, that strong reading ability is a universal potential and one easily acquired. Somehow the school set out, particularly after the Second World War, to destroy the ability to read well, and even more, to destroy the inclination to read, which has a more deadly long-range effect. Only 1 in 11 of us, I was told at the Colorado Librarians Convention, reads more than a single book a year, after graduation. In my own long classroom experience, even a majority of children who score highly on official reading scales can hardly read at all. I was asked to tell you what I did with my classes, but give me a break. If I told you, that'd throw me in jail. A lot of it was highly illegal, and I'm not sure the statute of limitations just ran out. But I'll tell you some things. First, about the perspective on school children I brought to bear. My kids, as they came to me, had been rigorously classified. I set out to declassify them. But in order for that to take, I found that they needed to comprehend the history, dynamics, and significance of classification itself. My kids had spent half their days in school confinement, missing the vital experience and risk-taking they need to make sense of things. I was determined to unconfine them by hook or by crook, and I didn't care which. My kids had been deliberately and systematically alienated from their families and their private cultures in ways virtually no one teaching school has bothered to understand. I worked to destroy that alienation by attacking its generating ideas dialectically. I gambled that the way to ruin the school machine was to teach dialectics, the challenging of all assumptions. But I made an exception. Except those surrounding family, community, culture, and religion. There's a vital need to use a different standard than dialectics to judge those who love you and those to whom duty is owed. I mean, don't pull the dialectic on your mother or your God, or you'll end up with neither. Some more. My kids have been deliberately addicted to the rote memorization of nonsense and deprived of the analytical tools to determine what nonsense it was. Well, there's absolutely, in my opinion, nothing wrong and much right with storing the mind with data and with models to synthesize new reality from and to test yourself against. But the addiction had to be stopped. Stopped and reversed with heavy doses of primary data and heavy-duty comparisons of the real differences often produced by primary data that challenge the conventional wisdom. I'm going to give you one case in point of that. While the New York Times was announcing, this would be several years ago, about 6 years ago, that incumbent mayor Ed Koch was 17% ahead of opponent Dinkins, my teams of 13-year-olds fanning out illegally all over the city took a sample three times as large as the one the New York Times used, and employing the identical mathematical sampling techniques, hardly very formidable to learn when they're actually examined, concluded that Dinkins, not Koch, had a narrow lead. When the new mayor Dinkins assumed office, we smiled, but I presume many New York Times readers looked at each other with a wild surmise, silent on a peak in Darien, Connecticut. That was an allusion to John Keats, who I learned in seventh grade on first looking into Chapman's Homer. Another thing, by the simple expedient of extracting from each kid on the first day of school three things that each one wanted to learn, I mean independent of school, I was able to launch the majority, at least part of the time, on a private, self-selected curriculum, questing for one then another of these learnings. As I was writing this, of course it's years after the fact, the ones which come to mind most readily were work as television actors, work in television and print commercials, flying lessons, crossing the Hudson in a rowboat, drifting down the Hudson in a rowboat. I think it was the same kid. He had a rowboat to Manhattan. It's useless. Drifting down the Hudson in a rowboat on the outgoing tide, building a gun, that was Brian Dents who built the gun, dressmaking, bicycling from New York to Cape Cod, walking around the perimeter of Manhattan. Isn't that a fascinating idea, that you would follow the perimeter of the island? which doesn't really allow, like the Charles, it doesn't allow you to do that. You sort of have to force your way around. Lecturing to college classes, apprenticing with the governor, a man named Cuomo, becoming a movie reviewer, studying law, many more would occur if you loosened my tongue with beer. Astonishing results came from letting kids pick their own goals, no matter how absurd or unreasonable those goals sounded. Just as long as you make it clear that you will hold their noses to the grindstone until they give their chosen work a thorough shot. Under no circumstances can it be like changing TV channels. Decisions have consequences. But there are few problems from the kids. Most that arise following this path come from school politics. Emmanuel Pariser of the community school in Camden, Maine, told in his school's annual report last year of paddling a kayak into Penobscot Bay toward a distant island. When he got there and landed on its tiny sand beach, he was worn out. But suddenly, he says, he was overwhelmed by the beauty of wild roses, sparkling sand, rippling waves, and other sights of the remote scene. How strange to feel this way, he thought. I've seen these things many times before. What's the big deal today? Pariser began to think about what makes things beautiful and what makes them interesting, even if they're commonplace. And it seemed to him that working to achieve the island had refreshed his vision. If a cruise ship had dropped him there for a few hours, he might not have appreciated it at all. He realized how important it was that he had gotten there under his own power, with his own paddle, in his own boat. This insight, I think, is the secret that separates those long-married people who look upon their marriages as precious treasures from those who see the bond as a jail sentence. In the former cases, both partners have worked at it. Pariser concluded his essay in the community school annual report saying, quote, I think a lot about education. My own was like being on a big cruise ship. I didn't know where I was going. I didn't know how we were getting there, but I knew I had to keep the officers above me and those at home happy. I never had to help the boat run, and when we finally arrived, it meant so little to me that I never went to any of my own graduations. I think we all value most the learning which we have come to under our own power, the destinations we choose and paddle to. It can't be that simple, can it? That human value has to be generated from inside? If so, we're in trouble because we've built an economy which cannot afford to allow us to think that way. Consider this, 55% of all local government employees are employed in the school game. 45% of all state employees are employed in the school game. Over 60% of your property taxes go to pay for schools. By the way, I cribbed those figures out of a book that was just published over in Amherst, Stephen Aaron, A Short Road to Chaos. Aaron's the guy who wrote Compelling Beliefs, so I really would recommend this book very strongly. If schooling is found irrelevant, an economic catastrophe will occur. The stock market will crash. Bald men will jump out of tall buildings. It can't be that simple. Somewhere between, get ready for this, 7 and 9 million people make their living directly or indirectly or invisibly out of the mass confinement of children in forced schooling.
Okay.
In their study, where have all the...
Hold on.
Confirmed what many had long suspected.
Let's hold this clip.
People...
Yeah. Okay. Dr. Bill's Cognition Plus... I wanted to say a couple things about John Taylor Gatto first. This, I thought his expose on what we've experienced while we were in school, most of us go to public school. I can't speak for private school. I did not go to private school. my education was in a suburban school. At the time, my parents thought it was a good one, and my children went to a suburban school, and we thought it was a good one. But if you get a chance to listen to John Taylor Gatto, read what he's written, listen to, there's many, many YouTubes of John Taylor Gatto, and he's just absolutely a jewel. He is amazing. He will make your heart sing, because not only does he speak eloquently, he's got a great sense of humor, and he's telling us the truth, not only about what we're doing to our children, but what was done to us. And it's true. I think it's so true what that one gentleman said. He went to school because he had to follow, do what the officers were telling him to do and what they were telling him to do at home. He didn't enjoy it. He didn't celebrate graduation. It didn't inspire him. And sadly, when we come into adulthood, that is the kind of mindset we have. Psychologists never talk about this. When we go out into the world and we have difficulty, parents don't talk about it. No one talks about it. What was this school experience and what did it do to our spirit? And the more you listen to John Taylor Gatto, the more we all start to understand it very much affected us. And people ask me why so many people are afraid to ask questions or question authorities. Well, social engineering, all through those years, you were expected to memorize what they said and cough up the answer and regurgitate it and give it back to them. Questioning things, deeply understanding things was not essential. It wasn't even desirable. This is called social engineering, people, and that's what was set up in this country more than 100 years ago by the robber barons. And that's what we see with our children. It's even gotten worse. They're reading less. They're on the computer more. This new generation coming up, this is going to be very difficult for them to be independent or ever feel empowered because they've been tied to these machines. The ones in grade school right now have been tied to the machines since they were little. So at least, however, we can understand why we grow up and feel unempowered. We have a hole in our heart. That's what I like to think of it as. There's a hole in our heart that we're trying to fill because we don't really know the cause of it. All we know is it's there. We don't feel empowered. We haven't learned how to experience joy. We don't get that the whole system was designed to make us feel this way and to make us feel more or less hopeless or depressed is exactly where they want us. I'm going to read a section here. We're going to go to break soon, but before we go to the next clip, I want people who haven't read Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars to put that on their list of things to read. It's only 44 pages. It doesn't even constitute a whole book. And there's a lot of diagrams that you can just skip over because I'm not sure those are scientifically accurate anyway. But it lays out the plan that the global elite scum of the earth, the international bankers and their, you know, minions decided upon at Bilderberg, the very first Bilderberg in 1954. And their decision was to socially engineer society using computers and data and ensure that they were supreme above all. They felt that the upcoming technology, if it got into our hands, we could make this world our own utopia, and that is not what they wanted. They wanted their utopia and our slavery. In Silent Weapons for Quiet War, right in the beginning, they say that their agenda was about genocide and slavery. So these are the same people, the robber barons, that John Taylor Gatto discovered, put together, took over the educational system in the beginning of the 1900s. The same kind of people, the same kind of thinking. And the more time they had to invest in making it dumb us down, the better they got at it. In fact, That's where the schools are at right now. They're dumbing down the students. They do not want challenges. They do not want questions. They want us just to be obedient slaves for their system. So I'm going to read a section where they admit this in Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars. Everything that is expected from an ordinary weapon is expected from a silent weapon by its creators, but only in its own manner of functioning. It shoots situations instead of bullets, propelled by data processing instead of chemical reactions, originating from bits of data instead of grains of gunpowder, from a computer instead of a gun, operated by a computer programmer instead of a marksman, under the orders of a banking magnate instead of a military general. Yet it makes an unmistakable noise, causes unmistakable physical and mental damage, and unmistakably interferes with the daily social life, i.e., unmistakable to a trained observer, one who knows what to look for. The public cannot comprehend this weapon, and therefore cannot believe that they are being attacked and subdued by a weapon. The public might instinctively feel that something is wrong, but that is because of the technical nature of the silent weapon. They cannot express their feeling in a rational way or handle the problem with intelligence. Therefore, they do not know how to cry for help and do not know how to associate with others to defend against it. When a silent weapon is applied gradually, the public adjusts or adapts to its presence and learns to tolerate its encroachment on their lives until the pressure, psychological via economic, becomes too great and they crack up. Therefore, the silent weapon is a type of biological warfare. It attacks the vitality, options, and mobility of the individuals of a society by knowing, understanding, manipulating, and attacking their sources of natural and social energy and their physical, mental, and emotional strengths and weaknesses. So, no wonder, right? No wonder we've got people who are smoking, who are drinking, who are gambling, who are addicted to the shopping channel. No wonder we are being attacked, and most of the public doesn't even know it. We have been under attack since childhood. Stay tuned. We'll be back shortly.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
Several years ago, I was developing a very severe situation. I called it my flippy heart. It just was doing not good things. And I did not want to go to a medical doctor because I just knew they would give me a cover-up pill. I didn't want to get onto that sort of thing at all. When I learned it was garlic and cayenne, and cayenne is a healer. It is a wonderful herb. I said, I think I'm onto something here. I'll tell you, I wouldn't be without it. It did wonderful things for me.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Thank you.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldnesoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
Okay, welcome back to In Defense of Humanity. I'm Al Whitney. We're talking about psychological band-aids right now. We played that clip from John Taylor Gatto, an amazing educator, explaining what happens to us when we're in school. That would be elementary and high school. So then you think about it. Children get out of school. Now they're ready to either go to college. And in today's world, they've raised the cost of college so much that many children have to go into debt to get their college degree. And sadly, many of those can't get a job when they get out. However, the debt goes with them. So then comes the workforce, right? For those lucky enough to get a job, the same people who engineered the schools were part and parcel to engineering the climate in most corporations and most jobs that the employee is going to have to cope with. On a wonderful documentary called Human Resources, free online, by Scott Noble, describes a little clip. I've got a clip from that describing what the robber barons decided to do about the workplace. Could we play that now, Ken? Clip number two.
In their study, Where Have All the Robots Gone?, Harold Shepard and Neil Herrick confirmed what many had long suspected. People trapped in an unrewarding work life were not only more likely to be dissatisfied, but were also more likely to suffer from low self-esteem, a feeling of helplessness, alienation, and to be plagued by a variety of mental disorders. The workers who were the most dissatisfied and whose mental health was the most impaired were the least likely to vote or participate in community organizations.
If you work in an environment where you're beaten up all the time, well, you're beaten up. Moreover, if you work in an environment that is so fragmented, that so robs you of dignity and so robs you of the expression of your own capacities, then you'll be diminished. You'll be deadened. You'll be bored. You will be reduced in your potentials. And you are not too likely to take initiative in other domains either. This is why Taylorism is pursued. This is why fragmenting of work is pursued. It weakens the workers, not just on the job, but in their communities too, which is what you want to do so that they don't take more of the income from themselves, thus reducing profits for the elites. So It's a perfectly sensible policy, a perfectly sensible approach, a devil's approach, but a perfectly sensible approach from the point of view of those at the top who are trying to stay there and who are trying to advance. Moreover, if they don't, they just get wiped out. So it's not even really an option. What you'd have to do is to create a new kind of economy in which these situations and these conditions don't restrict our options. The corporate entity, corporate person, it's not really a person, but call it an entity, is it pathological? Answer yes. Why? Because it drives toward profit regardless of the broader implications. It doesn't matter if your drive toward profit induces pain and suffering, promotes, you know, generates black lung disease in a mine, or pollutes the environment, or literally destroys the society. It doesn't matter. You're forced by the nature of the social relations inside and among corporations, the market system, to pursue, to accumulate, to pursue profits.
So, there you have it. You know, the child goes to school where he's unempowered, where he's conditioned to be an order follower, not to initiate, not to generate wonderful ideas on his own, and then he becomes an adult and gets a job, and he is in the same environment that has been socially engineered to make sure that he doesn't get ahead and he doesn't step out of line, and he continues to be an order follower. So then if he gets into difficulty, a midlife crisis, because, of course, his life isn't that meaningful, he's on this treadmill, and he has a midlife crisis, well, then society blames him. You know, he's having a midlife crisis. Well, now we know what a midlife crisis is all about. It's about an adult reaching a moment in his life when he starts to see that this system does not allow him to be himself. The system doesn't encourage it. In fact, the system discourages it. So, unfortunately, he goes to a psychologist, and he is made to feel even more inadequate because he's supposed to adapt to the system. He's not ever really aided in questioning what is this system, who put it together, and why are we all trapped in it. That's not what psychologists do. I don't even think they've not been trained. I don't even think they see it. Maybe some of them do, but they certainly don't help their patients deal with the fact they were raised in a system and they work in a system that was hostile to them. So no wonder you've got people who smoke, who drink, who gamble. They are looking for, I call them Band-Aids. I call them psychological Band-Aids. They are attempting to find something to fill the hole in their heart that this social engineering program has created. And of course, if they get sick, there's even more profit to be made from either their emotional or their physical illness that stems from being, from living really in such a hostile environment. So my recommendation is to listen to both of those, watch Human Resources, listen to everything John Taylor Gatto has to say, because he's really entertaining, and start to get a handle on what it is this social engineering is and what has it done to us. And stop, we need very much to stop criticizing each other, stop condemning each other, for applying Band-Aids. We need to be compassionate with each other because we didn't design the system. We were victimized by it. And most people are doing their best to cope with it. Sadly, some of their coping mechanisms are pretty destructive, but they still deserve and warrant our sympathy. I'd be happy to take callers. The call-in number is 1-800-313-9443. If you'd like to call in and tell me what you think of the concept of psychological Band-Aids, I'd love to hear from you. When I was doing my research, when I was a court-appointed special advocate trying to figure out why there were so many parents who were simply not there for their children. I ran into a book, an author, I'm going to say an author because he wrote many books, by the name of John Bradshaw. John Bradshaw does a good job of explaining what happens in the family unit that contributes to this mess. Again, very few psychologists look at it the way John Bradshaw does, but John Bradshaw is just absolutely brilliant. And many people can start to understand their origins and the role they played in their family and the role the family required of them and how that impacts their ability to feel empowered and pursue happiness. So sadly, when you have a dysfunctional society, we're all going to dysfunctional schools, we're all working in environments that are hostile, that doesn't do much to make us good parents. There are some good parents out there, but good parenting is something that should be modeled. And unfortunately, there are too few places that we can go to see good parenting modeled. And I recommend John Bradshaw. If you have children, even if your children are grown or you've never had children, he has some understandings that are just absolutely amazing. I know some people, in fact, I think some of you may be familiar with a man by the name of Mike Castle. Mike Castle is now deceased. He was on the network. He was, I think, a guest of Joyce Riley, a guest of True Aunt. He was a guest on many programs. He was brilliant. And Mike he was an inventor, and I even have some of his inventions in my house. And he and I got to be friends because he lived in Central Ohio. And he told me his story. Mike was a genius. And again, he was a chemist, and I'm trying to think, he was a special kind of chemist. And he did testing, environmental testing. He invented he called it a Marahaz. It was like a powder that you could put on oil and it would soak it right up and it would have no residue. You wouldn't even have to dispose of it as a toxic substance. It neutralized the oil. But at every, as he tried to make a living being an inventor and working for himself and starting his own business, he said at every turn, the system was hostile towards him. Made it very, very difficult for him to stay in business. IRS was on him relentlessly. He had difficulty getting contracts because so many of the corporations were hiring their own. So he struggled and struggled, and I think he felt somewhat like he had not succeeded in life. And when I started talking to him further, I realized that the reason he didn't succeed in life, and he did not financially, he was in difficulty right before he died, and for many years before he died, is the system didn't want him to be successful. The same thing happened to my father, who was an inventor. My father had his own patent. He wanted to market his own patent. Mike had his own patent. He wanted to market his own patent. Neither one of them could get funding. The big boys didn't want them to market their own amazing inventions. And both of them just struggled relentlessly. They were both geniuses. And the sad thing is, when they reached the end of their life, they both felt beaten up. And they both felt like they had not been very successful. And neither one of them understood that the system was designed to ensure that they were not going to succeed and challenge the monopolists, the big corporations. They don't want the little guy to get ahead. They want the little guy to serve the corporations and basically as slave labor. As you know, the income for the middle class has gone way down since 1970. Okay, we have a caller from Arizona. Michael, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, Al Whitney?
I'm fine.
Good. You know, you have a fascinating show today, and I have to tell you, it touched a nerve with me, because two or three years ago, I went down the rabbit hole on the Common Core educational system that they were converting to, and
yes.
I did some digging on who was behind it. And interestingly, I don't know whether you're familiar with this or not, but I was uncovering a couple of very familiar figures that were behind this through a company that they had either set up or it was ongoing. I didn't do the research on that. But it was Neil and Marvin Bush. Were you aware of that?
No. I thought it was Gates who was behind it.
Well, what's even more fascinating is while I was listening to your show today, and by the way, let me digress just a little bit. I heard you on John Statmiller's show last week. And I thought, okay, this girl's pretty sharp. I'm going to pay some attention to her, so I'm tuning into your show today.
Oh, thanks.
At any rate, and by the way, I'll tell you who I am. I go back a long way. Your partner, Ingrid Castle, knows me very well. John Statmiller knows me very well. As a matter of fact, I have a show on your network. My point is, I went back in to try to dig up some of these, you know, some of the research that I'd done, and it looks as if they've scrubbed it from the net. But I remember specifically Neil and Marvin Bush were deeply involved in Common Core, which makes total sense, by the way, to me. Doesn't it to you? those culprits?
Well,
Go ahead.
It wouldn't surprise me.
I don't want to get off topic on your program, but when I was listening to you last week on Statmiller's show, now you've got me doing some investigation on this whole licensing thing and the incorporation of the United States in 1871. So keep up the good work, girl. You're doing great.
Okay? What show do you have?
I have The American Awakening. I replaced Tom Lacovera 9 to 11 p.m. on Monday through Friday.
Okay, well, I'll try to turn it.
And I know I knew Ingrid Castle. I knew her husband Don. And you know, you mentioned my name, Michael Herzog, and they'll know who I am.
Okay, well, thanks for calling in, Michael, and I'm glad you.
Okay, and you know what? When I hang up the phone here, Al, I'm going to keep digging, and if I find something that hasn't been scrubbed, I'll call you back. Okay.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you, Michael, for the call. And thank you for bringing up Common Core, because I haven't gotten to that. We have done shows on Common Core, but what John Taylor Gatto was explaining, which was bad enough because that was my childhood and my children's school years, Common Core is more of that on steroids. I mean, this is horrific what they've done. Common Core is like five times worse than what John Taylor Gatto described. It is completely designed to unempower the children. And it is also designed to condition them not to think, but to participate in groupthink. So if you people go out there, I think Dr. Pesta, and if you haven't seen that, it's a wonderful YouTube. Dr. Pesta explains Common Core. He is an educator. He does a great job. So if Common Core is unfamiliar to you, I urge you to type in your search engine, Pesta and Common Core, and start listening to what he has to say, because this is going to shock you. It's horrific what's happening to our children. Okay, we have another caller, Joe from Oklahoma. Hi, Joe. Is Joe there?
John Bradshaw.
Yes.
Good man.
Yes.
Good man.
Great man.
And you know, I have several comments to make here. You know, one about him, and you have to look at the perspective that he comes from with regard to his teachings, preachings, whatever. I think that speaks highly of why he comes forth like he does.
Next thing is,
as it relates to your education deal, are you familiar with the Austrian educational model?
Yes. Okay, we're going to go to break. Stay tuned. If you want to hang in there, Joe, that'd be great. We'll be back shortly.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldnesoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
Extendivite, a seven-herb combination of garlic, cayenne, hawthorn, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle. Extendivite is designed to strengthen the heart and arteries and help the body heal itself. Doctors are not able to explain the improvements they are seeing in their patients' health who are taking Extendivite. People who once needed more pills are now taking less and getting better. Due to the unexplainable improvements in their patients' health, more doctors are calling to order Extendivite for themselves. Help Extendivite make your doctor a believer. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
In Defense of Humanity. I'm Al Whitney, and tonight we're talking about psychological band-aids, and we're talking to Joe from Oklahoma. He called in, and Joe's familiar with John Bradshaw.
Yeah.
And me too.
Yeah.
I think he's amazing.
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. No, definitely is. The other points I was wanting to get at is I don't think most people have been able to figure out how we got from there to where we're at now, and you know, it just suddenly appeared, and it's kind of like the deer in the headlights deal.
Yes,
people see it, but they don't know what to do about it. But I come across a deal about a year ago, the Austrian education model.
Okay,
are you familiar with it? Are you familiar with
I haven't that? Studied it. I'm familiar with the term, but I haven't really studied it.
I would certainly invite you to do a Google search on that. There's a few videos you can see with regard to it. And it all started out with Napoleon just whipping the crud out of the Austrians. And that's how the Austrians came up with this educational model. And you mentioned the bell ringing and to get everyone to fall in line.
Yes.
And that's where that all came from. And a fellow by the name of Horace Mann, who I'm sure you're familiar with, because many buildings on college campuses are named after Horace Mann.
Right.
And
In fact, John Taylor Gatto does talk about Horace Mann as playing a role in this. You're absolutely right.
And Horace Mann was a very evil man, in my opinion.
Yes.
And, he's the one that put the deal in place for what we have today.
Yes.
And all I'm trying to do is help make a connection of where it all started and why we're where we are now.
Yeah, and I think John Taylor Gatto, before the show, you know, this afternoon, I was listening to that wonderful YouTube that I mentioned called The Pathology of Schooling, okay? Mm-hmm. And he did, I swear, he said Horace Mann was the gentleman who got compulsory education in one of the states in New England. That was his job. He was not a nice man. And he was instrumental somehow in getting the state to vote for compulsory education.
That's my understanding as well, ma'am.
Yes.
It most certainly is. And he brought all of this in. If I remember correctly, he was a professor at, of all places, Columbia University.
Okay. And he didn't care much about education, but he was all in favor of getting all these children, you know, locked into the system so they could do conditioning on them.
Well, it's just like the Nazis. And see, that's what the Nazis did is that with their educational deal is they brought it forth from the Austrian educational model.
Uh-huh. Well, we can't...
These are just some points I wanted to throw out to hopefully help people see what's going on, and also wanted to thank you for what you do, and RBN as well.
Well,
I'm a long time listener, and supported as best I can financially.
Okay, Joe, that's really appreciated, and thanks for calling in, and thanks for sharing your research with us.
I'll continue to listen, and there's some other things I'd like to get send to you to put on your website. It's called The Original 13th Amendment, and it's about a 60 or 70 page booklet that I acquired about 25, 30 years ago, and I loaned it to a lawyer, and guess what?
He lost it and he died,
but I'm still trying to search out a copy of it, so maybe you could put it on your website, because you have a real good website and a lot of pertinent information to our well-being. Thank you, ma'am, and you have a good evening.
Well, thanks for all the nice remarks, Joe. Okay, people, we're going to go to break. We'll be back shortly.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentation's.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.